Your trusted voice for news is News Talk 1120 KMOX. KMOX HD St. Louis. It's 8 o'clock in Mid-America. Welcome back to Relationships 101 and Christine Niffen on KMOX.
Hey, this is Christine Niffen on KMOX, and you are listening to Relationships 101 because relating isn't always easy. Hey, listen, welcome back this week to all of you listening out there. This is a show all about free, solid, professional advice. That's what we do here. I am a psychotherapist and relationship coach operating in St. Louis, but of course KMOX is heard in 44 states at night, I believe. So, you know, we do a variety of topics here online, on the air, a variety of topics, and we have different guests on at different times, and I do a lot of babbling, as you guys know. But we have a guest tonight, Dr. Dan Weinstein. Dr. Weinstein has a doctorate in clinical psychology. He provides psychological testing and evaluation services and psychotherapy to individuals, families, and groups. He has consulted with and presented to faculty, school counselors, and parents from over 70 area schools and organizations. Dr. Weinstein has worked in a variety of settings with children, adolescents, and adults, including outpatient and community mental health centers, acute and long-term hospital psychiatric units, and long-term residential facilities. He's published articles on childhood diagnosis of attention deficit / hyperactivity disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder. Dr. Weinstein, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. Okay, so listen, you know, I'm in the same field as you are, in a sense, and I got a lot of what all that babbling was, but why don't you, in your own words, sort of tell us what population, who do you tend to work with, and kind of what do you mostly do?
I work with children as young as six, all the way through adolescence and into college.
Okay.
I do therapy, individual therapy, family therapy, and then I do testing for things like ADHD and learning disabilities. And the majority of the kids that I see either have some sort of level of depression or anxiety or a mix of things, ADHD, learning issues as well. So a variety of populations.
Okay. Well, let me ask this. I'd like to come from a little bit of a different angle because I think people out there might think, well, if you're bringing on a psychologist, pretty much child and adolescent psychologist, you know, you're going to do that same run-of-the-mill show about, you know, my kid's screaming at me and what do I do about it? But I always tell my clients, since that's not my forte, to turn on Nandy 911. So that's what I do. There's a pattern. But I'd like to come from a little bit of a different angle here because, you know, the thing I talk about is relationships, and I try to work with what I like to call the art of relating, why people aren't getting along in that. But what I'd like to do, since you're here, since your main population are kids and adolescents who do come in and talk to you as well in private practice, right?
Right.
Well, I'd like to talk to you about, I want to know what goes on. Of course, you're not going to name names. It's confidential. But I want to hear things more about, from the angle of how kids are affected by parents who fight and argue a lot, of divorce, and cover some of that kind of stuff tonight.
Okay, great.
I call it warring parents. That's a term I use when the parents are fighting and they fight a lot. Because there's, you know, I get clients in for lots of couples counseling and they come in at different stages. Some are afraid to talk up. Some openly just bicker relentlessly or unrelentlessly right in front of me. And so, you know, I always think about what that's doing to the children. So, you know, let me ask you this. When you talk with kids, with parents that fight a lot, tell me a little bit about how that makes them feel and, you know, do they express that differently when they're 7 or 8? Do they even bring it up? Do the adolescents go, yeah, my parents hate each other? Or tell me about what that looks like with the different age groups and how kids feel when that happens.
Sure. So some of the feelings that they have or that come across is there's themes that often happen when children are divorced, and there's a real strong sense of vulnerability that they feel. The family is disintegrating, and they feel very, very vulnerable. There's also a grief reaction that happens because there's a sudden loss of the intact family. A lot of kids have no idea that their parents' marriage may be troubled. Some may not. So there's this grief reaction or sense of loss of the non-custodial parent often, who they may not see, as well as feelings of intense anger, the disruption of the family. And a really, really common one is just strong feelings of powerlessness.
Okay.
And it does vary from age. What we know from the research is that children who are pre-adolescents, around age 10 to 12, give or take, tend to be most upset about the divorce. And it might be because they're old enough to know what's happening, but they're really not old enough to be in control of many things in their lives.
And now what age group was that again?
Around 10 to 12.
Okay, that they're affected the most?
They tend to be. They may act out the most, or they tend to be sort of show the most upset feelings.
Okay.
Whereas the teenagers are more likely to either withdraw, or it might show up in, suicidal gestures or talk of wanting to die, or it might show up in drug abuse, skipping school, kind of acting out.
And what do you attribute the withdrawing instead of talking about it? Why do you think the adolescents, or more the teenagers, like you said, why do you think they're more reluctant to discuss it?
I think it's because it's developmentally appropriate. At that age, they're trying to decide who they are and understand how they are separate from their parents. And they're, for good reason, trying to sort of break away from their parents and trying to understand, how they relate to things differently. So I think there's that sort of isolation piece that's intact. At that age, they tend to be, much more involved with their friends than their parents. And so they tend to... they also may focus on sort of the moral issues around divorce. So they may judge their parents' decisions and actions, whereas younger children do not have that, insight or understanding.
Yeah, they don't have as much baggage attached to it, so to speak, right?
Exactly. And so okay. A lot of these adolescents may become anxious and fearful about their own future love and marital relationships, a lot of what you talk about and the themes that you talk about in your show.
So they pull the stigma part on when they're teenagers. They've got the whole stigma part more than the ones who don't understand that when they're younger.
Definitely. The ones that are much younger, for example, preschool age, you see a lot of regression. A lot of, they may have met a certain milestone and they may regress. So you might see bedwetting in a 4 or 5-year-old. They may fear separating from their parent, which is pretty common, especially the one that they're living with. They may have a strong yearning of the non-custodial parent. So you see things like sleep problems and a lot of, appetite or body aches or things like that.
Okay. Listen, you were talking about acting out earlier. You talked about some of the things they went through, the loss, the grief, the anger, the powerlessness. I'm going to backtrack. 2 questions. Do they internalize it as their fault ever?
That's a really common theme. There's a couple of really common themes. One is that, somehow they caused it or that it's their fault. They may blame themselves, even though they may have very little to do with the divorce. They definitely have their parents telling them repeatedly that this has nothing to do with you. This is about, grown-ups in a relationship. So you often see that. You also often see a lot of caretaking behaviors of the older children and early adolescents, where typical situations say the parents divorce and they're living with the mother, and the mother's really, really depressed after the divorce, and they're trying their hardest to sort of take care of their mom because they see how down their mother is, and so they really want to help her out. So there's a lot of caretaking, sort of role-reversing kinds of behavior, the caretaker role.
Right, and that's actually interesting because that is that's a topic we covered I think it was back at the end of January, if I'm not mistaken. It was a gentleman who had a book called... it was about mother enmeshed men, and one of the things that definitely went on was after a divorce or something where they rise to the occasion, maybe the oldest son. And so they definitely talked about that, too. So that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Let me ask this. So you talked about the acting out. How do they act out?
And again, some of it depends on their, where they are developmentally, where the adolescents are more likely to engage in maybe violent behavior if they're prone to that, suicidal behavior, drug abuse, destructive behavior. And then you often see across the board problems in school. I often first see a child or adolescent in my office because they're getting identified by the teachers as having potential difficulties. Their grades are dropping. They're falling asleep in class. They seem really anxious. Nervous habits. They may have, repetitive kind of physical behaviors. Again, the bedwetting, the fears, the use of sort of comfort items. They need to be comforted a lot more. They need a lot more nurturance. So they may be more clingy and whiny, and they may need a greater understanding of their moods and their behavior because their moods and behavior are in such flux at that time.
Okay, listen, this is really great stuff for those of you out there tonight because you know what we have, I certainly know in my office people come in and they're weighing out divorce and they're torn because they just don't want to affect their children in a negative way. So we're talking with Dr. Dan Weinstein tonight and we're going to take a commercial break and when we come back we're going to talk to him about are there any ways at all to make it easier on the kids. So we'll be back.
Now, back to Relationships 101 with Christine Niffen on KMOX.
Hey, this is Christine Niffin, and you're back on Relationships 101. Listen, we're talking to Dr. Dan Weinstein tonight. He is a clinical psychologist who works here in St. Louis, and he specializes with children and adolescents in behavioral disorders, evaluation testing, works very heavily with the different school systems and is very well known here in St. Louis for that. And we're talking tonight about the effects of divorce, and we'll get to the warring parents, the fighting on kids. Dan, thanks for staying on the show here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Listen, before the break, I said when we came back that we wanted to get on, you know, I have people that come in my office, as I've said, and they struggle with, usually they're coming in by themselves at this point, and they struggle with whether to stay or leave a marriage, and there's a lot of guilt associated with it. That's what I get on my end about the effect that it's going to have on their kids. So, I mean, I know there's some pretty obvious things, but just, you know, from your own experience, what are some, if there's a better way? Because, I mean, sometimes people are not meant to stay together, and you know, I hear people say, you know, it's better to stay together for the children, although I'll be honest with you, I'm not necessarily a believer in that if they're fighting and warring and continually impacting their children. But that, you know, that's my opinion. What do you think of that, about staying together at any cost? And, you know, what do you think is, if you have to do it, maybe one of the best ways you can do it to least impact a child with negative effects?
Well, the research in this actually is really clear. It clearly states that parents who are warring or who are fighting all the time are putting their child at risk of a variety of difficulties. And children and adolescents actually do much, much better if their parents divorce, if there's a chronic level of conflict in the home. So the children are going to be better off in the short term and the long term if they divorce, if that's the case.
Okay, I want you to repeat that in case any of them, people who have come in to see me actually can hear this. No,
sure.
Really, do say it again. Say the, what the research shows, because I don't mean to be weird, but I mean, you have all this, and boy, does it mess people up when they become adults themselves and try to have relationships in terms of trust, in terms of, you know, they internalize it as their fault, so they run around owning fault of everything and being codependent and all this other stuff that ends up, of course, in my office. But say that again, what the research shows about staying together with heavy conflict.
There's a kind of a myth out there that's, you know, stay together for the children, that whole idea. And it is a myth, because the research shows that children psychologically, emotionally, they're much, much better off if the parents divorce, if there's a chronic level of conflict in the home.
Right. And so, of course, listen, I don't want a bunch of people calling and saying I'm trying to break up families, because I do not mean that in the slightest. Of course, I, you know, want people to go in and get some, you know, relationship counseling and coaching, couples counseling and marriage counseling in order to stop that conflict. But that conflict is terrible. Just terrible on the kids. So what is, if you're going to, I guess, get divorced, I mean, I usually say the kind of patent thing about, look, you know, kids survive divorce, but what they don't survive is the horrible belittling of the other parent. I mean, you talk to me a little bit about that.
Right. That's probably the worst sort of case scenario when parents divorce, is the negative comments about each other in front of the children, saying things negatively about their parent. It tends to alienate the kids from that parent. It may fuel their anger. They feel torn. Again, they feel stuck in the middle. So then they have these alliances with one parent over the other parent. So it really does the children's disservice with their parents, their relationship with their parents.
Absolutely. And like I said, the problems that it causes down the road, I mean, you know, a lot of people who come from divorced families understandably have commitment issues, because, you know, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to set themselves up for that kind of pain again should that happen in their relationship, right?
Absolutely.
You know, that's definitely one of the ones. And like I said, you know, you start owning some big thing that's all your fault, even though it's not. I mean, that's what, you know, that's what kids do. And as you know, that's what kids will do sometimes when there's abuse involved. They own it as their fault, because it's almost as if then if it was their fault, they could somehow act better and then it wouldn't happen to them. It's almost a way of trying to gain control over something bad happening. Isn't that really what it is?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that area where they just really sort of throw themselves in and blame themselves for things that they have very little control over, very little influence over. And the reality is some of the conflict between the parents may be indeed partly having a child or adolescent who is acting out or who's difficult to manage.
Yeah, a little chicken and egg thing.
Exactly. But in the long run, it really is about the relationship between the adults. And if they can't resolve that, again, I'm not advocating that all parents get divorced, but if they can't resolve that and the level of conflict is so, it's more long-term and it doesn't stop and it's very, very, you know, serious and conflictual all the time, then that's when, you know, they either need to seek therapy or seek some dissolution of the marriage.
Right, and honestly, when I think of parents continually in a high state of conflict, as you describe, you know, we're not talking some bickering, we're talking a high state of conflict, right?
Right.
You know, I actually, what I call it is, I call it a little bit selfish, because you know what? You know, it takes two to tango, and you really can't do that by yourself. And people do need to sit and think about the impact that that has on their kids. Now, that doesn't mean you're supposed to stay together, but maybe you can get the conflict down long enough to go on decent terms and part in decent ways. But that's a little bit selfish when people aren't just, you know, because, you know, you honestly don't have to fight. I mean, literally, you don't have to fight.
Right. And I'm really a big fan of sort of post-divorce and throughout the divorce counseling, which a lot of parents are reluctant to do, but they really need to be on the same page for the kids. If they're going to be co-parenting and the child's going to be going back and forth, they really need to have some, they don't have to obviously need to be friends, but they need to be civil with each other enough to be able to talk to each other about the difficulties the children are having in each of their households to co-parent.
Absolutely. So listen, when you, for example, get a child or an adolescent who comes in and to see you, maybe it's not for testing and evaluation for different ADHD and disorders like that, but maybe it's just, you know, counseling. They're having trouble in school and blah, blah, blah. You know, how easily or quickly do kids offer up? I mean, you go home, you start talking to them. Hey, what's going on? I'm sure it probably takes a while to get some kids talking.
Yeah.
How quickly do you get to that there's a problem with the fighting with the parents? Does that come quickly? Do you have to practically drag that out of them? How does that work?
It's so individualized. It really varies from child to child or adolescent to adolescent. Again, how old they are, you know, in their maturation process. The personality really determines that. Some people are just so much more open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could take several sessions. It could take months for some kids. Some kids have bottled it up for so long, and they're afraid of, you know, the parents' reaction to them talking about their feelings that they may hide it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, listen, we are talking to Dr. Dan Weinstein. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will resume the conversation.
Welcome back to Relationships 101 and Christine Niffin on KMOX.
Hey, this is Relationships 101, and like that guy said, this is Christine Niffin on KMOX. We are talking this evening with Dr. Dan Weinstein, a clinical psychologist here in St. Louis who specializes with children and adolescents. Listen, I usually do this at the end of the hour, Dr. Weinstein, but just to make sure I don't forget, why don't you go ahead and give me some contact? How would people get a hold of you? Do you have a website? How would they get a hold of you if maybe they thought their child needed to talk to somebody?
Probably the easiest thing is my website, which has my email and telephone number and everything. And I'm going to spell it out a couple of times because it's a little bit confusing. It's www.drdanw.com, but it's spelled long ways, www.doctordanw. Again, www.doctordanw.com. The telephone number is 314-646-7100.
Okay, and we will do our best to work that in again at the end of the hour because we like to do that for our guests on. Listen, you brought up an interesting thing, post-divorce counseling. Do you encourage parents to do that?
I do. I think co-parenting is difficult even in a marriage that is going really smoothly.
You're right.
And for parents who are divorced, not only do they have different styles and different personalities, and people parent differently. There's always going to be some inconsistencies. And when children are going from one house to another, granted the parents aren't going to completely agree and have the rules be exactly the same, but the closer they can be on the same page, the more likely the adjustment for the child is going to be a lot smoother.
Right, and let me tell you what, this from somebody up now on my end, dealing more with the older people than the kids, this is a tough adjustment. I always like to talk about, you know, the two places you can be in when a relationship ends. You can be the one that leaves, the leaver, or the one who is left. And you're going to have very different emotions based on which position you're in with that. The leaver may want to stay in contact and work a little harder on co-parenting, but the one who feels left can be hurt. And, you know, what is hurt really? But how do people manifest hurt? They're ticked off, blanked off. We're not going to say it here on KMOX. You know, and so that's hard. And what happens, what I see definitely with breakups and when marriages break up and relationships break up, it's rarely clean and neat. And most of the time, you know, somebody will come in, well, it was mutual. And I'm like, no, it really wasn't mutual. But most people try to act like it's mutual. But, you know, you have trouble with that. So here you bring up an excellent point that co-parenting is it's tough to have that be smooth even when, you know, you're both, you know, in the marriage and everything's going pretty well. But then you get all this hurt and pain and anger and all this stuff, and suddenly you're supposed to, you know, just magically have that melt away, and then you're supposed to suddenly be doing the co-parenting that you probably weren't doing before the divorce when you really need it now, right?
Absolutely. And I think part of that also is that the parents need to be on the same page in terms of the information that they give kids, because we also know about divorce from the research is that kids adjust so much better if they have information about the divorce. Now, they don't need an incredible amount of details of why the divorce occurred. They need a little bit of background information, but they need to know certain things from both parents. You know, obviously that they're loved, that the divorce is not their fault, but they need information that they can understand for their age.
You know, well, let me ask you a tough question that I think, I mean, it, you know, I guess it's a judgment call, but maybe you've got enough, you know, going on with this experience. So let's say this scenario, because I'm not, you know, I could make justification for either, I don't know, either way, I guess, in some strange way. So here you are in a relationship, and you've got the lever and the one being left. And the one being left does not want the marriage to end, but the lever wants out. And the lever wants to get both parents together and sit down and go, Mommy and Daddy have decided, you know, we still love you, blah, 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 we're not going to separate. But the one who doesn't want the marriage who ends refuses to be a part of that because they don't want the kids thinking they had anything to do with it because they don't want out of the relationship. What do you do in that circumstance?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really tough situation.
That is a tough one, and I've got it right now.
Yeah, often what has to happen is parents, unfortunately, will have to give sort of give their own story about, you know, what happened. And what we'd hope is that they wouldn't give too many details in terms of, you know, like, for example, if there's an extramarital affair, I don't know that the kids necessarily need to know that, especially the younger kids, that they don't, you know.
Okay, I don't think they necessarily do need to know that. But, you know, these are strange places because you could almost sit there with a pro and con sheet and find a way to justify both views, couldn't you?
Very true, very true. It's a really difficult situation. I mean, I think the most important thing that the kids really need to know, more so than the things we've talked about before, is sort of the practicality of the situation. You know, they need to know who they're going to live with, when they're going to see the other parent, where they're going to go to school, what's going to change. They need to know about future changes.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that they really, really worry about. You know, when am I going to see Daddy, and will I still get to see my friends, and, you know, where am I going to live, and where's the other parent going to live, and those kinds of things I think are really, really important.
So in other words, you can work some of the things in, but the point being, this is hard enough for them at first. You might need to leave out a few of the shocking details to perhaps later when everyone's transitioned, if you really feel the need to be honest about it, that type of thing.
Right, exactly. And I think the other thing that the kids really need is they need help putting their feelings into words. A lot of times their behavior kind of clues you into what's going on. But a lot of times they, for whatever reason, developmentally or other types of reasons, they don't either know what they're feeling or they can't express it or they're cautious. They need their feelings validated and that they're to be, you know, trusted and those kinds of things. The kids need to be encouraged to talk.
Listen, they do, because I tell you what, a lot of adults come in my office and they don't know how to express their feelings. So
yeah,
I'm sure that happens with kids, because, you know, that's one of the things that's one of the things I work with on people as adult life skills to learn to acquire, which is the communicating the emotion. So, you know, the kids don't have it yet, and a lot of times the adults don't have it by the time they arrive. I always use that example of, you know, when you're really mad or ticked off, what's behind that? Usually hurt feelings or fear. And instead of having the reaction, which is what you get from the kids because they're not evolved enough to yet have the words for that or understand that that's just a second layer behind ticked off and mad is hurt feelings and fear, to be able to go down to the second layer and get in touch with that. Kids have a hard time with that. But when the parents aren't even in touch with that's what's going on with them, they don't even know how to go down to the second layer to help their kids.
Very true. And I think what goes along with that also is the parents need to do what they can do to keep themselves healthy.
Right.
You know, they need to do what they were doing prior. They need to, you know, be doing, you know, their exercise or getting support from their friends, you know, seeing their extended family, getting the support of their family, because the healthier they're going to be, the healthier they're going to be there for their kids, and their kids are going to adjust better.
Okay, that sounds good. Listen, we are going to take another break, and when we come back, we are going to talk a little bit with Dr. Weinstein about, let's say hopefully it's before the, you know, you're going to get a divorce phase, and the warring is going on, and what kind of things we can do to help, and how do they get in my office to work for couples counseling? And we'll talk to Dr. Weinstein when we return.
Now, back to Relationships 101 with Christine Niffen on KMOX.
Hi, Hi, we're back, and we are talking to I'm having problems with those words. I'm not sure what that is tonight. Dr. Dan Weinstein, clinical psychologist here in St. Louis, and we're talking all about the effects of divorce and fighting and things like that on children and adolescents. And Dr. Weinstein, listen, I'm enjoying your talking on the show. We said that, I said when I came back, we would try to talk about, let's say we're not at that divorce stage yet. Yay, let's try to save and help something. Do you have kids who come in, and do you try to recommend counseling before they're getting divorced for the parents?
All the time. I mean, it's not always met with, sometimes it's met with resistance, and sometimes, the parents are willing to take a referral. But parents tend to seek help for their kids before they seek help for themselves. So often I'll see parents who maybe wouldn't have seen a couples therapist if they hadn't come in and I had recommended it, because again, they're more worried about why their child's acting out or what's going on with their kids.
Right, because I do remember that actually when I was in school years ago, I remember a family therapy class, and they always talked about the identified patient or the identified child, right? Everybody thinks it's the person who's acting out. That's the problem. That's no different than when somebody comes in for marriage or couples counseling and somebody's like yelling and screaming and acting so bad. I always say, listen, you have valid points too and things that you don't like, but the problem is you're acting out so badly that until you stop that, you're not going to get any validity for what you have to say about things.
Right. It's an interesting thing that happens often, that the child who's acting out is sort of diffusing the tension between the parents. And so the more and it might not be on a conscious level, but the more the child acts out, the less focus there is on their parents sort of bickering all the time or fighting all the time, because they have to sort of join together to try and help the child who may be acting out just because of the parents.
Well, because the parents, they have to then put the attention on the child too, right? Because they're acting out. Yeah.
Exactly right.
Talk to me a little bit more, of course not doing anything with confidentiality, but just what, and we talked about a little bit in the beginning, but what level of pain do kids have when their parents are fighting all the time? I mean, we talked a little bit about what they do with it, they internalize it, blah, 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 but how bad is it making them feel?
Again, this varies quite a bit, but the pain can be pretty extreme. I mean, this is I think this is number two on the list of all the stressors that, they listed out and did research on, the stressors that affect people in their life. And death of a spouse or a child or a loved one was number one, and number two is divorce.
Okay.
So it's pretty extreme. I mean, there's some pretty extreme feelings of, worrying that the parents don't love them anymore, or they feel abandoned, or they feel like the parent who left them has sort of divorced them too,
mm-hmm.
not just divorced the parent. So there's often really strong helpless and powerless feelings, because they can't get their parents back together, or they can't speed up the process or slow it down or control the fact that the divorce has been going on for, a year, or that kind of thing. So you see a lot of anger. These kids, again, often feel that they're at fault,
mm-hmm.
That they did something that caused the parent to leave. That's a really common one. And then grief. There's a lot of grief, because divorce is similar to death in terms of the dynamics. There's a lot of grief. It's a loss of the lives of and the children and the parents, the loss of relationships, especially if they're not seeing a parent as much, and the loss of that intact family.
Yes, there's that loss. I mean, when people come in for individual counseling with me a lot of times, I mean, sometimes you'll go over loss and grief issues, and loss issues aren't always somebody died necessarily. Loss can be, I didn't have the family I thought I should have had when I was younger.
Right.
Loss of the ideal, that goes hand in hand with that as well pretty badly.
Definitely. And the last thing I was going to mention is the conflicts of loyalty. They experience a lot of conflicts with, especially if they hear something negative from one parent, that they should sort of back that parent up, and then they have these allegiances, they feel back and forth, and so that's where they really, really feel stuck in the middle.
Right, and what happens too is, it's hard. I haven't been in the position of getting divorced. I understand I can only say I intellectually understand how hard and difficult it is. I have not experienced it. I'm not going to pretend that I have, but I can only say I understand intellectually how hard and difficult that must be. But also, there's a second layer there. It's not just your child only suffers if you're going and your father is a blah, 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 It's not just that. It's also they feel the tension.
Right.
They really feel that tension. And so you think, well, I'm holding it together. I'm not saying anything negative, because the books say don't say anything negative about the other parent because it's still their parent. And yet that tension, and they can tell and they can feel it. Don't you think?
Yeah, they definitely can feel it. And unfortunately, often they're not prepared for it. And so they all of a sudden sometimes parents are very good at hiding it until it gets so bad that they get to the point where they decide to divorce or to separate. And so there may be this sort of really big shock in with that grief response that they had no idea that it was coming.
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, this is just very, very difficult on everybody. There's no question about that. Listen, Dr. Weinstein, I want to thank you for being here tonight, and I want to ask you one more time. You are a clinical psychologist and a good one, I believe, here in St. Louis. And if people want to get a hold of you, they might decide that they need to, have their child, son or daughter, talk to you, their child or adolescent. How would they go about doing that again?
Either by calling. The phone number is 314-646-7100, or the website, which is www.drdanw.com, drdanw.com.
Okay. Listen, Dr. Weinstein, thank you very much, and this was great, and I hope you might be available to come back, because I know this is an important topic.
I'd love to come back and talk.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Listen, that is an important thing. That happens a lot. You know that divorce rate's hitting around 60% now. It's just a really rough topic, and it's not easy. And, think about it. By the time most people are getting a divorce, they're probably fighting anyway. And then, then you're trying to say to them, okay, but suddenly let all that melt away and do all this so that your child's not negatively impacted. I know how difficult it is, but it's a very selfless thing you're trying to do for the sake of your child, because they're affected and impacted in many different ways. But, you heard, I know some people might want to call up and be ticked off about it, but you heard what they said. If it's heightened conflict, I'm all about keeping families together. That's certainly the goal. But if it's heightened conflict that does not change, the research, according to this clinical psychologist, is not in the favor of staying together for the sake of the marriage if it's really bad. Of course, that's a subjective term. Listen, we'll be taking a break here in just a second, and then we'll be having the news. And when we come back, we want to hear your calls. Do you have any thoughts about the fighting and your children and the divorce and different things like that, or things about relationships? And we'll be taking those calls when we come back after the commercials and after the news at 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120, 1-800-925-1120.